Welcome to Jewish History with Rabbi David Katz, connecting the human side to Jewish history. For sponsorship opportunities or to support this podcast, please visit our donate page at www.support.rabbidavidkatz.com.
Hi, it's Wednesday afternoon. I would take a whack at Pesach, being sponsored by our close friends, the Glucks in Lakewood. Now there's, I believe, in Yerushalayim for Yontif. They're very courageous, as it were. They missed the rocket show. I hope they missed completely the rocket show. There shouldn't be any more rockets shot at Israel. But who knows? The Middle East is so crazy. You know, we have no idea. But again, thank you. Now, I was thinking, I don't want to do refried beans. I can't remember all the stuff I did in the past. I don't think we did the following, which occurred to me because I've been speaking about the Barbanel Haggadah. Actually, I never paid that much attention until like last year, maybe 3 years ago, when my son came back from Israel from Yeshiva, and the big deal over there was the Barbanel Haggadah. I said, really? But it was put out by the Moshe Rav Kook, a lot of footnotes, which the regular publication of the Barbanel Haggadah called Zevach Pesach. That's the first thing that Barbanel published in late 1400s. Later, he published his other stuff. Testis, interesting itself. He's publishing right after 1492. And you know, the Abarbanel, as long as people kicked out in 1492 and suffered tremendously. So, you know, he's looking at Pesach in a certain way. So in other words, this business of asking 100 questions and then giving an answer, which is the style of the Abarbanel, actually starts with the Haggadah, and it was copied in the Chumash, not the other way around. So that's as far as that goes. So I was looking at the Haggadah last year and this year to some degree, and then our good old Chaim Yehuda Meir told me that the same outfit, Moshe Rav Kook, published an English translation of the whole Barbanel Haggadah, which is quite a feat because it's not short. The article put out one years ago, but it's a kitzer, you know what I mean? But this is like the whole shebang, and it's taka put out by Moshe Rav Kook. I'm shocked. They published something in English by Rabbi Kesnet. And I think I remember from the art school. And it's combat published by Moshe Rav Kook and Or Sameach, which is interesting. And it's, you know, if you want to have it in English, which is very good. And Chaim Yehuda was very nice to tell me about it. And then he got it for me. He FedExed it overnight. So I can use it today in this talk. So I'm very grateful to him. He's been a very great help since I got to know him. Anyway, so you have the Hebrew and English out there. I don't know if it's available in the store. If you're in New York, everything is available. Elsewhere, I don't know. But it's not from the art school. It looks like an art school book. It's just called The Complete Barbanel Commentary in the Haggadah. Okay. So I was looking, you know, that's why my mind this year, for one way or another, better or worse, is, you know, thinking in the Barbanel, more or less. And I saw that he's into the astrology stuff. And that made me think about the following thing. In Judaism, we don't have a monolithic approach to 99% of Hashkafa stuff. Usually there's more than one opinion, often two. And there certainly is one when it comes to astrology. Okay? I think you know that. You have the Rambam, the Maimonideans, who say there is no such thing. Astrology is a bunch of baloney. And it doesn't exist. There's God, and that's the, and that's it. Get over it. You know what I mean? That's it. And there's a certain elegance, philosophical elegance, to the idea of Eino Milvado, literally. And there's no other powers you have to propitiate or deal with, even if you say God is stronger than the powers. And yet, at the same time, so therefore, there's no astrology. The movement of the planets and the stars have to do with mathematics and astronomy, and not with astrology. I guess the most eloquent presentation of this point of view is the Rambam in his famous letter to Marseille. You can look it up. And he says he studied astrology very closely. If I remember correctly, he says the first subject he mastered, or the second one when he was young. You know, the Rambam just swallows up whole subjects. But sciences, I'm talking about. And then afterwards, he came to the conclusion it's all baloney.
And you remember the story of Baal Shem Tov? They say in the Shivchei Abesh, there was a little kid, his father died. He said, Eino Melvada, you don't have to worry about anything. It's only Hashem. It's that kind of elegant business, you see? Of course, like that, you don't go for a bracha to somebody. You don't go to a kaver. If you need a shelch, you don't do this, that, and the other. You just daven to Hashem. That's one mahalach. But there's also a very large and a famous school of thought in rabbinic Judaism that says that there is astrology. And there is the mazalos. And they do have effect on things. And you know, and I know, you know, Rashi knows, quote these sorts of things. Why did the Jews leave? Why is it, that it's a tleh for the Karm Pesach? Because Nisan is the mazal tleh, all that business. And I've given many talks, you know, based on those ideas myself, if I thought the occasion called for it. But the Rambam would say it's all baloney. And they would say to Rambam, how do you know it's baloney? You're full of baloney because you're just coming from a logic point of view. You don't know what really happens in the metaphysical world. The whole metaphysical enterprise itself is flawed, like the Kuzri argues. So, for better or worse, there you have it. Now, the truth is, which one is harder to wrap one's head around? Or more importantly, if we go back 3,000 years and we ask ourselves, what was the matzav of Klal Yisrael? Seriously, these slaves who are now going to become free, who didn't know they're going to become free until they do it. No, they don't become free until after midnight. So they do the Karm Pesach and the Seder and all that business, still as slaves. Okay? Now, correct? So you and I know the end of the movie, so it's a different story, but they didn't know it. Now, the Jews at that time had been living for a long time in Egypt, which is the land of Spooky Wookie. They call them Emtesh Sharituma, whatever it is. It's a whole big system of gods. I think you know that. And Egypt is notorious, as I pointed out many times, even in the ancient world, for not only deifying human beings, that is to say, imagining gods coming in human images, which makes sense to some degree, like the Greeks would say, that the human being is the peak of creation because of its reasoning power. So therefore, the best way to portray a god is something like a Greek statue, you know, some human form. Right? No, the same way that the human being is the superior to all the other creatures, so the god will appear in that form even if he's superior to the regular humans. That's why you have the idea of a Greek god and a Greek goddess and so forth. But in Egypt, they had temples to pussy ants. I mean, yeah, they pushed it really far. Alligators, echvesuas. I mean, I'm serious. So, the Jews were part of that. The people they worked for who enslaved them and the others were believers not in gods, many gods, and many kochos. There's different ways to understand it. I'm not going to go through a whole Egyptology course over here. You don't need to know that. But it was a heavy-duty business. That is really what they mean when they called the Mentesh Sharituma, in my opinion. Now I'm speaking in my Maimonidean fashion. Notice, there weren't 49 gods running around, but it's so permeated the culture that you just part of it. So when this guy Moshe Rabbeinu shows up, and he says he's going to get the Jews out of Egypt. From the point of view of the slaves, most of them anyway, it's Moshe and his God versus the gods of Egypt. You understand? And indeed, that is the language that's used in the Chumash. You have that weird thing that I pointed out in the past. B'chol Elohei Mitzrayim Eseh Shvatim. I will punish. I'll bring the judgment to Elohei Mitzrayim. And if you translate Elohei Mitzrayim as the gods of Egypt, not just the powerful people in Egypt, so what's the and Chazal do go that way. Rashi, I think, mentions that the idols melted and so forth. Remember that? So, something about the gods themselves. So what's Shad? I'm going to punish the gods. I want the Jews to see that I, Hashem, punish the gods. What's Shad in that? And so the question I'm raising is, how did Klal Yisrael, I imagine Rove, I wasn't there, but I imagine Rove didn't have what I would call my Maimonidean perception of things in which, this is a philosophical approach, it appeals to the modern personality. And the approach is like this. There are no gods of Egypt. Get it? The whole business with the temples, all the rest of it, it's all bull. It's just a figment of imagination.
It's a figure of imagination. Even though you see these gigantic temples, I mean, they really are gigantic, with these huge gods and statues and this and that and the other, and ceremonies and gossip business. It's all baloney. It's a nito. You understand? I think I told you the story of Rabbi, I'm sure I mentioned it, of Rabbi here in Baltimore, Rabbi Sternhill, the big Talmud Chacham, Hungarian Posig, let's put it this way, from long ago, from my youth, passed away long ago. Dart school, I think, made a biography of him. Anyhow, I remember Rabbi Rottenberg, who should be, who needs a reform, told me this, that Rabbi Sternhill was a dying like a munkash, you know, in time of Milchus Elazar. I think that's right. And then came the Holocaust, and he had to go through the war, you know, all these terrible things. And then when the war's over, I think it was in Italy, he ran into an old friend of his, he hadn't seen since the beginning of the Holocaust, and they're like one of the very few survivors of Derech Hevra. But this guy that he met had gone totally off the derech. He's running around with women and this and that and the other. And nevertheless, the excellent fact that they survived the Holocaust was a common bond between them. And I think they used to be chavrusas maybe in the old days. And so they hugged and kissed and this and that and the other. You can imagine. I guess we're talking 1945, 46, I think. And they sat down, had a cup of coffee or whatever. Talk of the old days. And, you know, and let's put it this way. They didn't talk about religion. They tried to avoid it. But sooner or later, Rabbi Sternhill couldn't contain himself. And he said, Shmerel, what happened with you? You know, you used to be from guy, this, that, and the other. And now, you know, he went off the derech. And the story is that the guy said to Rabbi Sternhill, he said, Herzachayim, neither of us is, he said in Yiddish, neither of us is going to heaven. Why? He said, I'm not going to heaven. Look at me. Of course I'm not going to heaven. And you, why are you not going to? Es ist nicht da. There is no such thing. You see, if you're a consistent atheist, right? You see, the whole business of the world, the synagogues, the churches, the mosques, and all the rest of it, is just all big error. That's all. It's a big mistake. Right? There's nothing there. So that would be a Maimonidean perspective, except, of course, Judaism being the exception. So Judaism is real, and all the other stuff is baloney. I mean, really baloney. Now, that's radical. Okay, I want you to think about this. I'm trying to take you back the best I'm capable of the original Pesach. Chayvon and Liris Atzukil Yatsim Mitzrayim. So what does that mean? As far as I can think, the B'nai Yisrael, the 20% who survived Plague of Darkness, they were nidir geshlagen. You know, they were really down. They've been oppressed by the Egyptians. And if they say they're in the Memtah Sharitum, it means that they themselves were persuaded about the cogency and the validity of a lot of the Egyptian ideas. The only thing is, this guy Moshe shows up and he says, I can get you out of here. And it doesn't require any kind of, effort on your part because you're just sitting there. The templates happen. The Mela. And so they followed him, at least 20%. And they saw that their ancestral God, you hear what I'm saying? El Hei Avosechem Avram Yitzchak Yaakov Nira Eli. That's the lotion that Moshe Rabbeinu uses in Parshas Shemos. So he could identify with the slaves in terms of a common ancestry, common tribalism. Tribalism. We all come from this guy named Abraham, which is true. So, and Abraham had a God. You hear how I'm talking? Abraham had a God. His God was more powerful than the other gods. So that implies that there are other gods also. But of course, my brother is bigger than yours. And my brother can beat five of you, you know, with one hand tied behind his back. That's how powerful he is. You have no idea. So you have brothers, but my brother's better. You have gods, but my God is better, stronger. And I'm sure, Libby Armerly anyway, that when the Esther Machus happened, and then they're told to Shech, the God of Egypt, and it's coming Shabbos HaGadol and all the rest of it, and smear the blood on the doors, all the rest of it, he's saying, like, listen, I need a positive act of civic disobedience from you, and you're going to spit in the face of the Egyptian gods. You hear what I'm saying? And they won't be able to do anything to stop you. So it sounds like they do exist, but the Rabbanu Shel Olam, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, will render them helpless, which is a pretty impressive situation, right?
render them helpless. Suppose I told you this would be a good movie. Iran gets ready to shoot 500 missiles in Israel, and it doesn't work. It's gatenish. And they don't know the reason for it. And then you say like this, the Ribbono Shel Olam intervened, save Eretz Yisrael, but there were Iranians and there were rockets. He just intervened that they shouldn't be able to do anything, any harm. See, also, there are different gods out there, or if you prefer the word kochos, you know what I mean? You could use the language of kochos. I'm talking about there are a lot of ways in the Jewish literature, rabbinic literature, from the Gemara on, which these things are described. And like I say, you can use the word kochos, you can say the Tsar Shel Esav, the Tsar Shel Mitzrayim. There's a lot of ways of saying it. And they have powers, and they can be propitiated, and, you know, and they offer benefits. But the strongest of them is the strongest of them. And our God, the God of Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, is a million times stronger than them, a trillion times stronger than the other gods. Which is pretty interesting. And so when Moshe says, Elohea v'sim shalchani aleichem, the God of your father sent me to you to say we're getting out of here, they probably, in the beginning, were afraid. Can our God actually, our ancestral God, be stronger than all the gods of Egypt? All these kochos with the huge temples and the pyramids and, also, and the mummies and all the gods of business? Right? I'm sure many of them said no. The frum ones, so the believing ones, by Yamein Ha'am, they believed that this God of Moses is going to be more powerful than the others. And Paro seems to have reacted that way as well. You know, Hashem Hashem Shemo Kolo, and those, I don't know about your God, my gods are good enough, they're strong enough, and so on and so forth. So it's just interesting, this ideational framework in which the original Passover takes place. And as we know, comes the Shabbos HaGadol, and they do kill the god of Egypt, the sheep, and they do smear the blood and all the rest of it. And then comes Makkos Bechoros, as we know. And the Jews are triumphant. The gods of Egypt are not able to do anything to the Jews to stop them. B'nei Yisrael Yotzim B'yod Ramah. And you therefore have a confirmation of the introduction to the history of this new deity who's stronger than the other gods. If you, the language we use in Chazal to convey this idea is called Shidud HaMarachos. Baruch Shalom Shidud HaMarachos, which means God discombobulated, he messed up the zodiac thing. I'll beat the zodiac, I'll beat astrology. The month of Nisan, Mitzrayim should have won. It's their month. It's Mazel Tov and all that business. And they didn't win. Hi, how can you do that? Aren't there astrological rules of reality that cannot be defined, cannot be defied? Isn't it true that we have this and this, the moon is in the seventh house and Jupiter jumps through the hoops and whatever they say, that this and that will happen? Aren't these, you know, natural forces that control the affairs of man? And the answer is, yeah, most of the time. But our God can do miracles. And the miracle precisely consists not simply in the physical realm, although that's very important too, to be able to bring blood and frogs and all the rest of it and split the sea. That's impressive. It really is. But what's more impressive is he's able to break the laws of nature as they saw it, because astrology was part of the laws of nature. It's part of metaphysical nature, you know, but it's part of nature. It's the way the world runs. If you are born under this and this star, you're going to have good luck or bad luck. Or if you're in a mazel of, what is it, Mars, you'll be a killer. I mean, that's the way it goes. These things do govern. Except that Hashem is so powerful, he can mess with the system. You see, if he wants to. That is goof and ace. When you have an ace, what you're saying is there's a violation of the laws of physics, a violation of the laws of science. The Red Sea doesn't normally stand up and split, but it did. Ordinarily, you can't have hail come out of nowhere with fire. Eishlim eslachachas besocha bored. But it did. You understand? You can't have the kinim in this way, but it did. And so you're saying that these, you know, plagues demonstrated physically that God can break the laws of nature when he chooses. And therefore, metaphysically, Hashem can trounce and trump the metaphysical laws of the astrology. So even if the star is in this position and the galaxy is in that position and so on and so forth, Alpha became HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shidda Samarachas. If he wants to, he can intervene and mess over the system. Okay? And that is, I'll tell you again, there are many Chazals like that. There are certainly many Rishonim and Mefarshim that go with that Mahalach, sometimes at great lengths. And they see it as part of the miraculous process. And hold that thought. Then you have the Maimonideans, those types, who say like this. There ain't no such thing as astrology. All the stuff you think is baloney. God can do miracles. Yes, that's true. No question about it. And if he wanted to, he could totally intervene in the metaphysical world. But he doesn't need to. You understand? Metaphysical world is not what you say it is. It's not, you know, mazel tov and this and that and the other. There's right and wrong. There's yosher and tzedek and mishpat. Din v'cheshbon. And that's how the world is run. And the Rambam himself says, you know, over in the Hilchos Yisurei Torah, only Yodea Talumus knows how it works. We know how it works. We know it works. And if we could see the secrets behind the process, we would see the logic in it, but there is a logic in it. You see? There is a logic in it. And the problem with that, of course, is that God has to conform to the rules of logic. But nevertheless, leaving that philosophical problem aside, there is a logic to it. And so, if you're a Maimonidean, then what you say happened is as follows. God willed it that there should be 10 plagues. And God willed it that the Jews should leave and Pharaoh should harden his heart until the right moment and then he should crack. Right? And there should be a Makas Bechoris and all the rest of it. And God willed it that the idols of Egypt and the gods and the Kochas and the forces of Egypt and the magic and the mysticism and all the rest of it should be exposed as being non-existent, really. Not that they should be beaten or triumphed, but they should be revealed as a mirage. You see? When it came Makas Bechoris, all the rest of it, and then Malcolm Mavis marched around Egypt, the message for the Maimonideans, the message was supposed to be, see, Eino Milvado, literally. Eino Milvado. So all you have is Hashem. If he makes the world, he runs everything physical, metaphysical. And Bertzosa Makatzer, Bertzosa Markim, you know, like you say on Yom Kippur night. Hashem can do whatever he wants. And he doesn't have to contend and overpower anyone. All the gods of Egypt lined up can be defeated by God. Why? Because there is no such thing as all the gods of Egypt lined up. That's a literary statement. You see? It's an idea some guys thought up. It doesn't conform to reality. It's like, if like I told you, on Pesach, the Rebbeinu Shalom had a fight and defeated the boogeyman. The way Yaakov fought with the angel of Esau. Right? It was a struggle, but don't worry, the right guy won. No, it's not like that, would say the Rambam. Right? There is nothing else. People are stupid, and over the course of time, religions and pagan religions popped up, as the Rambam explained so famously, you know, over there in Hilchos Avodah Zarah, you know, Bimei Enosh Tos, Anashim Tos Gedola, that famous essay. And just like people and mankind have made a lot of stupid mistakes in the course of human history. They've made some smart moves, but they also made stupid ones. This is one of them. Religion in general is one of the stupid ideas out there, with the exception of Judaism, of course. Right? And therefore, the task of Mitzrayim, of Yetzias Mitzrayim, was precisely, to the Maimonideans, was precisely to demonstrate Eino Milvado. Right? Eino Milvado. And when Hashem says, Es Eshvatim, Belohei Mitzrayim, what he's trying to say is, I'm going to work either, like the Chazal say, you melted the statues, or this, or that, and the other, to convey to the Hebrews who are leaving Egypt,
There's nothing out there. Enam Olvada. Now, did that happen or not? I'm sure. Look, for Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron and Miriam, you know, for the superior types, the Rambam would say, they became Maimonideans. They probably were beforehand. Right? For the other Jews, and again, I don't know. So I could be right, I could be wrong. I'm just telling you what I think. For the other Jews, especially those who have been enslaved and all the rest of it, no. They didn't see the point of Einohim Bilvado. They just saw our God is a lot bigger and stronger and more powerful than all the others put together. Like the guy said, I could take you guys all on with one hand tied behind my back and, if necessary, two hands tied behind my back. Because I can smash you all. I'm more powerful than you. And when the Bnei Israel left Egypt, how should I put it? Did they think we're triumphing over the gods of Egypt? Or did they say, wow, now we see the whole Egypt is based on a lie. There are no gods of Egypt. Not really. Right? The Egyptians believe in that stuff. But it's all baloney. Right? It's all baloney. That's a horse of a different color. You see? And so, I think, this might be the reason for the two, it's one of the reasons anyway, for the two versions of the Haggadah and the Magen, Maschel Begnusim Saim Shvach, Rab versus Shmuel. Shmuel, of course, says that the Magid part is very short and direct and doesn't go into metaphysical and spiritual matters so much. It just says, Avodim Ha'idol Fire Mitzrayim Ba'yosei Shem Yor Chazak Ozerun Etuya. And that's the heart of it. So why are you celebrating a Pesach? Pashim Shat, we were once slaves in Egypt. It was a bummer. And then Hashem took us out. We couldn't get out on our own. Hashem took us out. Elo Hotzei HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yetzeh Mitzrayim, and so on and so forth. So that's true, of course, and it's a profound truth, presented in somewhat of a superficial way. The other version of the Magid, as you know, starts from Mitchila of the Avodas Hayom Aseinon. So that's already a more elaborated version of what happened, in which case you have a much more dramatic presentation of the spiritual side of the seasons of Mitzrayim. Vanitzak el Hashem elay b'seinu, v'yitno olin avod akosha, as alach, as adchak, adchak as alach, as whatever it is. You know, all those things are to convey that the Bnei Yisrael, and the Pasuk is there, were reduced to such agony that they cried out to Hashem. Hashem answered them. Right? So, one sounds to me, the Shmuel one, avodah v'yitno, pretty much, like you might say, it's the first version, that there are other gods of Egypt, but our God is more powerful. I mean, infinitely powerful. And therefore, you don't go into all the spiritual side of these things, because he doesn't focus on that. Instead, he's just talking about the short, basic history. That's the heart of it. It's like somebody asked me some from time to time, what's the best history book? I always tell them, get the simplest and dumbest. I mean this. Simplest and dumbest. And get the story straight in its broadest context. And later on, you can come back to it and revisit it with a more detailed set of accounts. Right? The same thing. And so forth. So that's like a basic, you know, idea. But the other pshat, Rav, not Shmuel, says, no, you got to go back to Terach. And you go back to long, long ago. And although, as I've said all the time, the Haggadah Shel Pesach sort of elides and skips the story of Yosef and the brothers, because apparently that would still be, you know, controversial to some degree. But so he does skip the story of Joseph and the brothers. Instead, he goes, Arami Ovid Ovi Ve'er Mitzrayimah. But there's a greater deal of detail and texturing and levels. And so I think that when you do Mitchila Ve'Azariah Veseinu, that whole business, you get more into the theology of it. We cried out to God. God listened to our prayers. He heard what we said. He saw this, the language the Torah uses. Vayaras Amaleinu, Esalachatzeinu, and all that business. And so what does that mean? They have a more direct experience of the divine. And I think it's more like the idea that Eino Milvado, right?
So the question I'm raising, which is, what was the state of mind for Klal Yisrael, you know, at that time, ties in with different positions that people, Gedol Yisrael, have held from day one. You find in the Gemara, Ein Mazal Yisrael, and then other places, the Yesh Mazal Yisrael, you know? We find some places in Chazal, Anivel Amalch, Anivel Asarf, and then you find in Medesh Rabbah the other round, Lo Ani El Asarf, Lo Ani El Amalch. So you won't get any kind of hard and fast official position what the Jewish religion says, or better yet, you get multiple variants of those, but it's no good when they contradict each other. And so when you think for a minute about where were people holding theologically, logically, at the time of the giving of the Ten Commandments of the first Torah, so then you end up seeing the story of Mitzrayim and the Yetzias Mitzrayim as some very interesting and different human angles. Anyway, this is a few thoughts I had. I want to thank, as always, the Glucks. I hope they're having a good time in Eretz Yisrael. I hope Eretz Yisrael will have a good time, as much as can happen during a war. But you know what I mean. Iran shouldn't bother them and all that. And we should get through Pesach safely and securely, all of us. And with that, I wish you a good week.
For sponsorship opportunities or to support this podcast, please visit our donate page at www.support.rabbidavidkatz.com.